Welcome to our newest season of Humane Podcast in 2021. Humane is your first look at the startups and industry titans that are leading and disrupting ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education. I am your host, David Jacobovich, and this is Humane. If you like this episode, remember to subscribe and leave a review. Now, on to our show. Welcome back, listeners, to the Humane Podcast, the leading show on applied AI, data science, and ML. Today, we're bringing to the show serial entrepreneur Stephen Banerjee. I've had the pleasure to meet Stephen in Silicon Valley when we've been running our Tech Dinner series in San Francisco. We recently met him at the Press Club at the Four Seasons and also at our single store office. So I had some lovely conversations talking about all things data. Stephen's a serial entrepreneur who previously is the founder of Mykonos and today is launching his latest venture, which is focused on natural language processing in biomedical research, explainable AI, and drug discovery. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Hey, thanks, David. Thanks for inviting me over.
Well, I love all things data, and I love founders who are building, especially in the industry, and yourself as someone who is a repeat founder. We also, for the audience here, got to meet each other also from the OnDeck community. OnDeck, for many of you listeners, is the new YC of the 21st century. So if you've never checked out OnDeck, be sure to check it out. And I know you're backed also by OnDeck, which is very exciting.
Yep, that's correct.
Excellent. Well, hey, start us off and let everyone know a little bit about your background. You're built tried and true on the West Coast. So I'd like to hear about what you did, what you've been scaling, and what's led you to be a repeat founder.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, a little bit background here. So I am a mechanical engineer by training, and I started my, you know, graduate research in semiconductor technologies with applications in biotech almost like more than a decade ago in the early 2010s. I was a doctoral fellow then at IBM Labs here in San Jose, California. And then I also ended up writing some successful federal grants with a gene sequencing pioneer at Stanford in Ron Davis before I ended up going to UC Berkeley for grad school research. And then I became a visiting researcher. So during the course, I eventually founded my first company, Mykonos, in 2017 to pioneer cell and gene therapy delivery platforms using silicon chip technology that I previously was working on. And during my time of founding and then running the company, I came to realize the tremendous pain that exists in this industry in terms of querying and accessing biomedical knowledge, evidence, and insights that are actually hidden and buried within all this very disjointed, siloed, and remarkably messy biomedical data sources. And a lot of this data exists without context. They do not share a common language. So in late 2020, I actually ended up starting this new company called NextNet in order to leverage the, the recent breakthroughs back then in natural language-based AI and with a vision of bringing this explainable version of this AI to the biotech and pharma. So, I've been working on this since late 2020, and we are at a pretty exciting juncture today.
I think it's always very exciting when founders become repeat founders. And I think what's really exciting is you spent a lot of work in the lab, working in deep tech, working in hardware and software. And there must have been things that you discovered when you were building your first company, when you were doing all this research in Mykonos, and then you had some aha moments and then decided, let's do it again. What excited and encouraged you to be a repeat founder?
Yeah, that's a great question, David. So I think one of the key motivations for me personally is that your biomedical R&D is a very broken system. And I'll actually maybe, spell out some facts here. So there are, I think there is actually studies done, I think there are around 23,500 or more diseases that's known to mankind. And out of which probably a little over or a little less than 5% actually have some form of cure or treatment. You've got hundreds of millions of people that actually suffer from, let's say, rare genetic disorders. And unfortunately, a lot of that stems from the way, your biomedical R&D is conducted. Very, very expensive, very highly risky. An average cost of bringing a drug to market is around $2.6 billion. It takes around 10 to 15 years, from the early stage discovery to launching into the market. And unfortunately, more than 96% of all drug R&D actually fails. And, this is a really bad social model. this creates this enormous burden on our society, on our healthcare spending as well. You know, one of the reasons I started NextNet was when I was running Mykonos, I kept on seeing a lot of our customers had this tremendous pain point of, you know, where you've got this all this domain and subject matter experts, the scientists that are actually working with very little of the available biomedical evidence out there. And a lot of the times that actually leads to false discoveries. And there's ample evidence in like scientific literature where false discoveries likely greatly outnumber true discoveries in preclinical research, and hence bad decisions are made. And whether, you know, you're like selecting new targets or you're, you know, designing a new drug in terms of molecular design, or you're performing, you know, clinical trial designs and so forth, you know, access to a very limited amount of biomedical knowledge can lead to, you know, bad decision making. And one of our core motivation was, you know, let's try to build a platform by leveraging the latest in language AI so that we can enable the scientists to be able to query and access all that information, all the biomedical knowledge, like the totality of biomedical evidence out there, so that they can understand these underlying molecular mechanisms of diseases and so forth. And that we see as critical to the development of effective and efficacious drugs. So, you know, the way we put it is like we're building this digital infrastructure for biomedical R&D and decision making. And our goal really is to, you know, liberate, you know, the people involved in this drug discovery and development so that we can liberate them and give them access to all the knowledge and information and insights out there that currently, you know, they don't have access to.
Now, you're speaking music to my ear, because when you talk about querying data, often today we see with the leading data analysts, data scientists, most of the work still is done with queries, right? And these queries can be in different languages. Sometimes they're low-level languages like Rust and C++ or built on top of compilers like WASM and WebAssembly, or even more modern with Python or SQL. So querying is so important to get at the heart of data to understand all the analysis. I'd like to hear a little bit about the data that you're seeing, this big data in biomedicine. I mean, what are the file types? What's some of the data that you and the team are seeing?
Absolutely, David. So I think that really kind of cuts to the core of what we're building, right? So you have got all these different, you know, biomedical data that are very disjointed, disparate, remarkably messy. You've got this all this variety of different modalities of data, right? You've got our DNA, RNA sequence, protein functions, gene expression, biological pathways, disease databases, imaging. You've got scientific literature. Just to give you some kind of a breadth of the data available. So every 10 seconds, there is one life science paper being published. And then you've got, you know, 10 million gigabytes of molecular data, like sequencing expression type data available per scientist. And think about this, our human body, it's a living, breathing big data system. You've got 37 trillion cells packed full of data with billions of chemical reactions per second. It's a massive data system. And unfortunately, the way a lot of this data exists, it's very non-uniform. So non-uniform, not only in terms of the nomenclature of the biological terms. So for example, you know, genes and proteins can have these different aliases and synonyms and IDs from different data sources. You know, data schemas are highly inconsistent. They're not machine readable. You rarely have a control, like control vocabularies or ontologies in all this highly unstructured data. So for example, let's say if you want to find, you know, if you want to query, let's say, hey, show me all the type 2 diabetes studies where a certain gene of interest, let's say some gene is differentially expressed, that could take weeks, if not months. And that poses a big problem because you have a lot of tools that are available. And a lot of these tools are open source. These are like software and databases that are mostly command line centric. They've got very technical UIs. And there are like literally thousands of these tools. And these tools were built piecemeal. And they were created for the specific needs of a certain academic research group, right? So this was built on grant money. And what happens is that a lot of these tools quickly become outdated because of lack of maintenance on the back end, because the grant money kind of runs out. And then the people that actually develop the tools, they kind of leave the project. And so these tools, there are all this plethora of like bioinformatic tools and software and databases out there that are plagued with program bugs. They mostly lack documentation or have very complicated documentation at best, very, very technical UIs. And for an average scientist or an average person in this industry, you really need to have a fairly deep grasp or sophisticated understanding of, you know, database schemas and SQL querying and statistical modeling and coding and data science and, you know, mastering mirrors of R libraries and Python packages in order to access these online tools and databases. And, you know, the problem with that is that not only, you know, all this biomedical data that's out there are siloed, but the people working with this data are siloed as well. And so, you know, biomedical data with a context of collaboration and this kind of siloed thinking actually adds very little value. Now, just because it's available, like all of this data is available, doesn't mean that it's usable. And that's what we have, you know, what we're seeing, and that's what we're here to solve.
Yeah, I think one of the big issues we're seeing all across every industry with data is more data is better, but wait, more data is better, but what can you do with it? How can you work with it? How can you put it into this holistic system or one integrated system where everything's connected? And then the data analysts, the data scientists, the ML engineers, the bioinformaticists can actually understand how to parse that information. And it sounds like a lot of that you're focusing on is around text and, you know, these research papers and these studies. And as you mentioned, every 10 seconds, one's coming out. I mean, if you had to read every 10 seconds, a 30 to 100 page research paper, not possible. In addition to the data sets that's being shared for reproducible analysis, the amount of data growing is exponential. And so this begs the question, you know, how do you create a robust system that's using full text search, that's using semantic analysis, that's diving deep so that ultimately research can be done better, faster, cheaper? And it sounds like NextNet is at the heart of that, of helping to pioneer that NLP for drug discovery and development.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, David, one thing to clarify, I think people often, you know, think that we're just dealing with text. I think one of our core differentiators is that we are not only going after text, like scientific literature and patents and reviews and so forth, but we're also going after more, you know, molecular data sources, like, you know, disease databases, you know, DNA RNA sequencing, and gene and protein expression databases and so forth. So we're, you know, we are kind of extracting information from all of those. But I think to answer your question here, so we have built probably the most sophisticated NLP stack that allows us to analyze this vast corpus of disjointed and very multimodal data, and then connecting knowledge and concepts extracted from them, reasoning across all this interconnected landscape, and then providing scientists with the research capabilities beyond human insight. So the way to think of this in a more simpler term is, you know, Sapiens is basically, it's teaching itself biology and chemistry by reading papers, textbooks, extracting knowledge from different gene protein databases, understanding all of that, contextualizing all that information, then updating itself every day by reading, you know, hundreds to thousands of papers a day, millions of abstracts a month, ingesting all this massive, you know, sequencing, expression databases, and so forth. Now, an average scientist can read up to potentially, I would say, around 400 papers a year max, right? So just in the last 24 hours, you had around 10,000 papers published, life science paper, right? So with that rate at which an average scientist can read all that information, it would potentially take the person 20 years to go through all the information that was published just in the last 24 hours, right? So what Sapiens does, and it does really well, is it's able to extract knowledge, concepts, facts, and connect all of those into this massive knowledge graph. So we have built probably one of the most sophisticated knowledge graph, you know, at the heart of what we're building, and then we are building applications on top of that. So we have discovered close to 100 million contextualized machine curated relationships, and our goal is to, within the next 12 months, to be reaching the mark of a billion relationships between biological concepts, between facts, between biological entity like cells and genes and proteins and disease and pathways and metabolites and so forth. And then on top of that, we have built this, you know, we have built applications such as search and discovery. So you can ask Sapiens abstract questions like, what are the biomarkers for such and such disease? Or how pathway X affects gene Y in some cell type Z? Or what are the research trends for certain area X? And so you can ask those kind of questions and you can begin to analyze the results. So Sapiens basically surfaces those results in the form of relationships between concepts, biological concepts, and these entities. And then you can manipulate those connections in a network. And you can also upload your own data. So it lets you, you're performing some biological experiment and you're generating images and RNA sequencing and so forth. And so we're building the workflow, which is completely codeless, you know, zero code, where you can upload those internal experimental data, you know, proprietary data onto the platform securely. and then transform all of that into this massive network and really begin to contextualize that, you know, that information and begin to manipulate those relationships and, you know, generate actionable insights, generate some hypothesis and test and validate those hypotheses, share that across the enterprise within your team. And then
looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-hour energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Take informed, you know, decision, both scientific and business decisions. And that's a very powerful thing.
And from everything that you're sharing, Stephen, look, there's been a variety of models built over the years with a variety of text corpus of data going from the millions to now the trillions of parameters. You know, we think of OpenAI, we think of GPT, we think of BERT. There's just a variety of models. And your team's building state-of-the-art. What does state-of-the-art NLP look like for you and the team at NextNet?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of the work that we're doing could not have been done like 2 or 3 years before this, because I think some of the advancements that has happened in the last 2 or 3 years has been really, really phenomenal. So just to give you some perspective here, so less than a decade ago, in order to understand what text is about, your AI algorithms would only count how often certain words occurred. Now, the issue with this approach was that it kind of ignored the fact that the words are synonyms and only mean something if they're contextualized. But, you know, your recent progress in NLP research has been accelerated because of the adoption of this kind of self-supervised learning from, you know, very large-scale data and the transformer model architecture. So I think, you know, transformer is potentially one of the greatest breakthroughs that has happened in NLP, you know, recently. It's basically, it's a neural net architecture that was incorporated into NLP models by Google Brain researchers. I think that came along in 2017 and 2018. And before transformers, your state-of-the-art models in NLP basically were like LSTMs, like long short-term memories, or the widely used seek-to-seek architecture. And those were based on, you know, recurrent neural nets. And, you know, by definition, this kind of recurrent neural net architecture processed data sequentially. That is one word or word piece at a time in the order that those words appear. But what happened around 2017, 2018, when transformers came into the picture, you know, the transformers' innovation was to make language processing parallelized, meaning that all the tokens, and by token I mean like it can be a word or a character, you know, subwords. So all the tokens in a given body of text are analyzed at the same time, at least within a window, rather than in pure word sequences. So in order to support this kind of parallelization, transformers basically rely on this AI mechanism called attention, which basically, as the name suggests, is pretty much, you know, exactly the same thing. It's how do we get this kind of AI models attend, you know, to the important semantic parts as we do as humans. And so attention, if implemented scalably, can enable a model to consider the, you know, the relationship between words, even if those words are far apart in a text or in a big sentence, and then to determine which words and phrases in a passage are most important to pay attention to. And I think this really allowed this kind of transformer architecture to learn the meaning of a word in relation to its context in a sentence. And that really solved a key problem, David, which was, you know, a key problem with previous LSTM type models, this kind of recurrent neural net type models. But of course, with this kind of parallelization meant that it's vastly more computationally, you know, it's definitely vastly more computationally efficient than like recurrent, you know, neural nets. You know, they can be trained on larger data sets and built with more parameters. But of course, these all come at a big price. These are incredibly resource intensive, very technically challenging, and very few companies or researchers actually build their own NLP models from scratch. So, you know, it takes enormous amount of this computational resources and engineering know-how to train models on these massive data sets with millions of billions of parameters. And so you may have heard of like this GPT-3 and BERT models and so forth that require like several thousand petaflop or something like the petaflop per second days or something, you know, one of those parameters that they actually measure into train and then millions of dollars per train. And these are very complex, very costly to build. And most companies simply don't have the resources to build such large language models from scratch. So, you know, virtually all advanced NLP in use today actually stems from, and this is like irrespective of the industry or the setting, they're based on a small handful of massive pre-trained language models. So some of those language models are, you know, for example, BERT from Google and Roberta from Facebook and GPT, you know, like GPT model from OpenAI and so forth. And we are actually leveraging some of those models, those kind of language, you know, generation and representation models. And then we have built our own proprietary NLP in architecture on top of that, and, you know, and a lot of the tools in-house. And that has really allowed us to be able to, you know, extract, automate the knowledge extraction from all these very diverse, disparate data sources in the biomedical arena that would just not have been possible just, you know, 2 or 3 years ago.
It's super fascinating to see the journey that, Stephen, you've shared with our listeners about how the entire NLP industry is continuing to evolve and how this means a variety of new products is continuing to evolve. And those products include access to parallel processing, access to cloud compute, access to larger data sets. And you were sharing at the onset here that you and your team have built what is known as Sapiens, which is what powers NextNet. Can you share a little bit more about under the hood on, you know, now that this technology is becoming more mainstream, how Sapiens is leveraging that and what are some of the features that Sapiens is going to be helping in this industry?
So the thing that powers Sapiens is this massive knowledge graph that we have built at the core. And we have, as I was telling you before, that we have discovered close to 100 million, like, you know, AI-derived machine-curated relationships between biological concepts, entities, and so forth. So I want to give you some perspective here. So 100 million machine-curated relationships, contrast that with one of the leading companies. This is a, you know, kind of a classic incumbent in the field. And I would probably not name names here, but they have, I think I was reading there one of their fact sheets, they have discovered close to 6 million biological concepts that they hand curated over 20 years. We have reached close to 100 million relationships between concepts and facts and so forth within a little over a year. And again, this is based upon some of the latest advancements in NLP and so forth. And we are fastly reaching the mark of potentially close to 1 billion relationships within the next 12 months or so. So what we have built are automated platform Sapiens to help companies identify like new targets, generate new hypotheses by like understanding the underlying cause of a disease, help them guide the research for molecular or like therapeutic design to develop the most effective medicine to treat that disease. And potentially as we move forward, we also see applications of Sapiens where it can be used for, you know, clinical trial purposes, like for patient stratification, identifying patient subgroups to understand how individual patients will respond to personalized treatments and so forth. So Sapiens is, you know, our goal here is to really make biomedical data accessible and useful for scientific inquiry using this platform so that, you know, your average person in the industry, let's say a wet lab or dry lab scientist or a VP of R&D or CSO, or let's say director of research can ask and answer complex biological questions and, you know, better frame hypotheses to understand this very complex multifactorial diseases. And a lot of the insights that Sapiens is, you know, extracting from all this, both publicly available data sources are proprietary to the company. And then you can map and upload your own internal data and kind of, begin to really contextualize all that information by uploading onto the Sapiens and, in terms of contextualizing with the insights that surfaced by Sapiens and then rapidly test and validate hypotheses and hence reduce the development time, cost, and failure rates. And I think, you know, one thing, David, I really want to make sure that our audience understands, you know, NextNet is not a data broker or data aggregator. We see ourselves as a digital infrastructure for biomedical R&D and decision-making. And that kind of goes back to the original, I think we were talking about how bad decisions can lead to drug failures because our domain and subject matter experts are working with very little of the available biomedical evidence. We're trying to liberate them so that, you know, they can have access to, you know, kind of the totality of biomedical evidence out there, right? And Sapiens actually does that. So, you know, we are rapidly going, you know, growing our platform, and we have just recently started limited trials with some of our early adopters. This includes academic research lab and some selective enterprise clients. And over the course of this year, we are really, you know, fine-tuning a lot of our platform UI and the workflow and so forth.
Very exciting. And I know at NextNet that you've been also growing the team. You're currently hiring. I know you have, among other roles, a full stack engineer open. So can you tell us more about growth, whether that means through fundraising or through the team as NextNet is going through this next chapter?
That's very relevant, David. Thank you for asking. So we are beta testing. We're the platform. Basically, we have built a search and discovery feature. So we are beta testing that with selective enterprise clients and some academic research labs. And the goal for us, during the course of this year, to really work closely with some early adopters to refine the UI and the graph navigation, the knowledge collaboration tools and the workflow and so forth. We have also been raising a financing round. So we've got half of that invested and we are looking for additional investors to come and join us in this journey. And the goal for us is to really raise a larger round sometime early next year and then scale this platform to at least half a dozen, 6 to 8 enterprise clients and, potentially a dozen academic research labs sometime next year, and also build out a leadership team and also go for, as we call them, elephant hunting, bring on board some large biopharma and biotech customers and continue to build our IP and leverage our key differentiators that we have to also keep our competitive pricing and then go on to raise a more significant, Series A, after that and really kind of expand from there, customer-facing teams like support, sales engineering, accommodate new customers, partner with other instruments like instrumentation, life science, R&D companies that can offer Sapience as a part of their product offering, and really, continue to build out the team because, one of the things that's essential here, we are building, at the end of the day, a software platform and selling it to the biotech, to the biotech and biopharma customers will definitely be an interesting journey. So, and I'm looking forward to, bringing people not only in technical roles like full stack and UI UX and bioinformatics, but also, people in sales and marketing as well. And I think we are looking for investors and we're also looking for people to join us in this journey who can help us build this platform.
That's exciting. And if we take a step back and look at a longer term roadmap, every founder has a great vision of where they see the industry, where they see their product and where they see change and disruption. Can you paint a picture of if we're looking 2, 5, 10 years down the road in drug discovery and development, where would you like to see the industry grow and how will that picture change?
First and foremost, of course, I would love, personally to see more and more drugs getting approved and, the failure rate decreasing because, as I said earlier, it's a massive societal cost the way biotech R&D occurs where more than 96% of the drug fails and even I think I was reading this, the top 10 to 15 selling drugs actually only work on 30 to 50% of the patients at most. So we're almost failing 70% of the patients, right? And I cannot imagine another industry where the product failure is this rampant. So one of my vision, and one of our goals here is to really make a lot of this information and knowledge that are buried within all this siloed data sources accessible to an average person in this industry. And accessible without writing a single line of code, right? So that you can search, discover, generate hypothesis, test and validate, share that within your enterprise, and really make a massive impact in the way, the organization performs biotech R&D. We are looking for organizational transformation in the way the biotech R&D occurs and the decisions are made. And, we see ourselves, as I said earlier, as a digital infrastructure for biomedical R&D and decision making. And our goal is to really kind of become, and I think this also is kind of as a part of a mission statement, is our mission is to do for biomedicine what Microsoft's OS did for personal computing, to really empower scientists, to empower an average person in this industry to ask and answer all these complex questions without mastering coding, querying languages, or arcane statistics, and be able to get to that knowledge and be able to share that knowledge and to really transform the biotech R&D as a whole.
I'm excited. I think that today we're learning a lot about the journey, about the change of applying new applied AI, applied ML, and applied data to the industry. So there's a lot of potential there, a long, exciting road ahead. What message would you like to share with our audience as a takeaway today, Stephen?
We are definitely looking for early adopters. This includes biotech companies, pharma, or academic research labs that would like to test out Sapience and like this to be a part of their journey of their biomedical R&D. We're definitely, as I said, we're looking for also investors who would like to partner with us as we continue on this journey of building this, you know, probably one of the most sophisticated natural language-based platform, or as we call it, an explainable AI platform. And really, you know, my message to the audience is that, you know, watch out for us. You know, our goal is to really transform the way biotech R&D occurs. And that's my personal mission. I founded my first company with that vision. And I have been continuing on this journey, you know, with NextNet to be able to do that. And I feel very grateful and lucky to be in this, to be doing all of this with a team of really, you know, brilliant people. So that's my message.
Excellent. Well, this episode has been with Steven Banerjee, the founder and CEO of NextNet. Steven, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, David.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. Did the episode measure up to your thoughts on ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education? Share your thoughts with me at humanepodcast.com/contact. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe and leave a review, and listen for more episodes of Humane.